And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on Midday, Carol Lenig and Aaron Davis will join me to talk about their excellent new book. It's called Injustice: How Politics and Fear Vanquished America's Justice Department. It is an excellent exploration into how President Trump has undermined the DOJ and how former Attorney General Merrick Garland mishandled efforts to hold Mr. Trump accountable. So Carol Lenig and Aaron Davis will join me tomorrow on Midday. And joining me now is Lori Taylor Mitchell. She's an education advocate and the founder of the Student Support Network. It's a nonprofit organization that for 10 years has addressed the challenges of food insecurity experienced by students in Baltimore County schools. She joins us on Zoom. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here.
So give us an idea of the scope of the issue of food insecurity in Baltimore County. I think when a lot of folks think of Baltimore County, they think of places like Towson and Timonium and Cockeysville and Moncton and places that seem to be pretty affluent the last places you would think might have food insecurity issues. But you found throughout the county that's not necessarily the case.
Unfortunately, yes, that's true. Maybe it would be best for me to start out with sort of the larger picture of poverty in the school system as a whole. Right now in Baltimore County Public Schools, about 75% of all students are now living at incomes that qualify them for free and reduced price meals. That's about 83,000 students throughout the county. And of those, almost 32,000 qualify for SNAP, the food stamp program. So the hunger and food insecurity and poverty are widespread in the county. They tend to be concentrated on the west and east sides and in the center and a kind of a corridor up the north. But it's widespread in every district now. And I think it happens to be in more affluent areas relatively unseen. You know, we don't see poverty. For example, where I live in Towson, I had no idea that 10 years ago, my son's former high school had nearly 300 students living in poverty, which actually was what began the network. So it's a much more widespread problem than people think in the county. Yes, in Baltimore City, hunger and food insecurity and poverty are more widespread, but it's a problem in the county now as well.
And when we talk about people living in poverty, what's the metric? What measurement do we use? Does it come still from the federal government? And what's your take about whether or not the federal government is, you know, accurately depicting whether a family and an individual child is in quote unquote poverty?
Well, that's a very good question, because the federal government still determines that metric for free and reduced price meals and also for SNAP. So the vast majority of students who either qualify for SNAP or free and reduced price meals are living mostly at 130% of the federal poverty level. So the federal poverty level at 130% is about $32,000 a year for a family, $47,000 a year for a family of four. That's all it is. But we know from the MIT Living Wage Calculator, for example, which calculates poverty all over every state in every county in every state, that before taxes, to meet basic expenses in Baltimore County for a family of four now is $127,000 a year. So if a family of four is making $60,000, they don't qualify for any assistance, but they are tens of thousands of dollars away from making ends meet. And the extremely low thresholds for poverty that are set by the federal government are a huge problem in addressing poverty, because too many people who are in poverty make too much to qualify to make ends meet, but they are still thousands of dollars away from self-sufficiency. So, and those people are invisible in the statistics. They don't show up because they make too much, but they still live in poverty. So that metric is a big problem nationally, and it affects us here as well.
And the metrics are not, as far as I understand, adjusted for geography. Lesser places where it's less expensive to live, and where it's more expensive to live, still have the same levels, right?
That's absolutely correct. So, Maryland, which has a much higher cost of living, families here get no more than, for example, a family living in Alabama or a state where the cost of living is low. It's only adjusted for Alaska, Hawaii, and Guam, for example. The 48 states, you don't get any more money or what, depending on where you live.
Lori Taylor Mitchell is the founder and a current board member of the Student Support Network. Let's go to the phones to John, who's on the line from Baltimore County up in Parkville. Welcome to the show. Thanks for checking in.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'd like to ask your guest if in the blueprint that we have been hearing so much about and that is rolling out billions of dollars to school systems across the country, across the state rather, was there any of that money that was going to go to address the problems that she and her nonprofit are addressing?
All right. I'm not aware of anything in the blueprint that, tackles food insecurity directly. Lori, what can you tell us about that?
Well, the Blueprint for Progress is focusing on community schools, which usually have quite high poverty rates. But the caller is correct in that addressing food insecurity as a specific issue, to my knowledge, is not part of the policy of the Blueprint. There is funding to address basic needs that can be used by community school facilitators for food and other basic necessities, but the focus of the blueprint has really been on increasing staffing and salaries, which is much needed for support people in community schools. There's also a tremendous amount of, unfortunately, reporting required to spend this money. So the community schools program has been effective in many ways, but it's problematic in terms of not addressing the problem of hunger and food insecurity directly and specifying that money should be spent for that.
Yeah, and to John's point, there is money in the blueprint that is directed specifically for students who are in poverty. So they get a boost when it comes to allocating the money as opposed to, kids in more affluent areas. So it's a kind of a related point, but that's a good question on the part of John. So Lori Taylor Mitchell, tell us about the Student Support Network. What sorts of services, what sorts of information, what sorts of resources do you make available to kids who are dealing with these issues?
Yes, well, the Student Support Network operates in 21 partner schools in Baltimore County, around the county. We have, by the way, 33 schools on the waiting list wishing to join. So our main focus is programs in the schools. We meet the students where they are, that is, in the school. And the focus of that is what we call rooms of support. There is a room of support in every school, every partner school, where school staff can take students in need, and they can go to that room and they can get food, clothing, school supplies, personal care products. Staff can talk to students. Is there a need that might be met that isn't in the room, and can we provide that? We've learned a lot from school staff. Thermometers for students experiencing homelessness. Well, light bulbs, because there aren't enough light bulbs in the house for students to do their homework. But the network does spend more of its resources on food than anything else. So students and families can make appointments to come and get food in the rooms of support. We also have food distributions, especially before breaks. In fact, as we speak at our new storage space in Timonium, there are many volunteers who are packing hundreds of bags of food to be distributed before the winter break. The school breaks and the summer are the worst time for food insecurity because students are not getting free meals in school. We also provide weekend bags for students facing food insecurity over the weekends. Food insecurity is a chronic lack of access to nutritious food, but the anxiety associated with food insecurity is tremendous. I mean, hungry children can't learn, but the anxiety about whether there's food enough in the house after school, on the weekends, during the breaks. So we provide food bags for students also to take home with them on the weekends, and then they don't come to school hungry on Monday.
There's a place in Owings Mills, an elementary school there, Owings Mills Elementary, where the kids refer to as the student support room as the kindness closet. There is a stigma, isn't there, about having to, you know, be one of those kids for whom it's necessary to go to the kindness closet and get supplies, get school supplies, and get food. How do you reckon with that? How do you handle that? And what about these rooms and the way you've got it set up is good about, you know, dealing with that parameter of it?
Yes, those are great questions. Well, first of all, the network volunteers and the school staff work very hard to set up the room and make sure that it's a welcoming place for students. It almost looks like a store. And so they can come in and get what they need. And to address your question about the stigma, especially for high school students who may be more self-conscious and they don't want to go to the room, they don't want their friends to see them going to the room. That is addressed in part by staff and their gentle encouragement, but also they can request supplies that can be put into a bag and dropped off at a counseling office, so they don't have to be seen if they don't want to going to that room of support. But I also have to say that now, after 10 years, with the number of years that we've had these rooms in schools, it has become much less of a stigma. There's so many children in poverty in these schools. It's a problem that's affecting them all, and it's becoming less something to be embarrassed and ashamed about, and more directly, they know this room is there, they know they are welcome there, and so they more and more of them are taking advantage of it, which is a wonderful thing.
And you're doing this, as you mentioned, in 21 schools with 33 schools on the waiting list. Is this a matter of, you know, to scale it up to help meet that demand? Is it a matter of more volunteers, more money, all of the above? What do you need in order to meet this increased demand?
Well, you're right. It's pretty much all of the above. I mean, we definitely need more funding to expand, but that funding needs to include the infrastructure that it takes to distribute those supplies. In other words, you know, if we would increase the number of schools, we need the staff to help set up those rooms of support, stay in constant contact with the school. They need to be stocked and they need to be shelved. We need more volunteers to bag food for distributions and so on. But basically, it would take more funding than we have right now, unfortunately, to expand to those schools, and some of them have been waiting for years, and it's primarily a funding issue at this point.
And again, you're concentrating on Baltimore County, so this is very specific to the county school system there in Baltimore County, right?
Yes, that's correct. And I have to say, on a more positive point, the network has also acted as a catalyst in many of these schools. That is, once we're there, we do outreach to local businesses, community organizations, houses of worship. They know that we're there, that they have a place that they can drop off food and supplies if they wish, or make donations. So this kind of hyper-local giving is really meaningful to a lot of people. And so that is one way we've been really able to expand what we can offer, at least in our partner schools. We had $250,000 in in-kind donations last year and expect that to be even more this year. So people are responding in that way.
And I got to let you go, but I know you do things outside of school as well. If a family has a fire and there's a, you know, a devastating traumatic experience along those lines, you're helping with that. You've even organized some college visits, as I understand. I mean, so you're doing things in addition to supplying food and really, you know, essential resources to kids in the schools themselves.
Well, we do our best. We've had to limit that to some extent just because the demand for food is so high. But yes, you're correct. We had an emergency situation, for example, an unaccompanied youth. That means they're not living with a parent or guardian. The school staff said she's sleeping on the floor and she has no food. So very quickly we got her a mattress, bedding, and got her food. So whenever we can, we do respond to emergencies outside of the school. Yes.
Lori Taylor Mitchell is the founder and current board member of the Student Support Network. Thank you, Lori, for your time today and for the work you're doing for these kids. They really need it, and you're doing good stuff. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And up next, LaMonica Jones. She is the director of Maryland Hunger Solutions. We'll get her perspective on the other side of a quick break. But before we go to that break, each week here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of people who have lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 127 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Police have identified one of the three people who were killed last week, Dante Gladney. Was 34 years old. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, your local NPR news station.